I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please be advised that Gen X, This Is Why, contains adult language.
There is something about this particular scene that he looks indescribably gorgeous.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Gen X, This Is Why, the podcast that reexamines the sometimes bizarre, often scarring media from our shared childhood. My name is Amy. I'm a proud Gen Xer born in 1977, and I have fellow Gen Xer, Pamela
also
Bob
77,
here.
77, baby.
77! The best year, although Elvis died.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I always equate it with that, yes.
I do too. Summer of Sam and Elvis dying.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. So, Pamela, you have risen to Little House fame. Through your series, your shorts, Living on a Prairie. So why don't you just tell everybody briefly what that is about?
Well, sure. Living on a Prairie is a 6-episode short comic, dark comedy, I shall say, about a woman with, let's say, social anxiety who doesn't feel like she fits into the world very well. And her only sort of respite is a little house on the prairie where she feels all the love and acceptance that she wishes she can get in her real life.
I feel like the character's whole idea of just staying home and watching Little House on the Prairie was like the idea of COVID before COVID hit.
Totally. You know, it's funny you say that because I've often thought, so we've developed it into a half-hour show that we're currently trying to sell, keep your fingers crossed, which delves more into, you know, the character of Pamela and who she is and how she got this way and her relationships, family relationships, work relationships, all of that stuff. And I've often thought in thinking about that character, what she must have kind of loved lockdown.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
She was me during lockdown.
Yeah.
I was telling my therapist, I'm thriving during lockdown.
Yeah, she didn't have to be around other people. Mm-hmm, she could just cocoon in her own personal space and feel safe. I mean, listen, I know I watched a lot of Little House on the Prairie during lockdown.
I watched 3 years of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So just a quick artist question. So I'm a memoirist, so I write memoir, right? Yeah. So the character in my book is me.
Yeah.
So when I talk about my book, I'm always like, so I blah, 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 blah. Now I notice you talk about Pamela in third person.
Yes.
Is that weird for you or?
It's not because.
That's an actor thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely, you know, you write what you know, right? So I'm definitely writing a lot of this from, if not direct personal experience, we've all felt out of place at one point in our lives or outside of the norm. I mean, certainly just as a Little House on the Prairie fan, you know, we're all closeted, right? Like,
yes.
It's not cool. I don't know. That's why you don't see like outward Little House on the Prairie stuff because it's not considered very cool. Or,
well, you know why? Because those goddamn Walton fans.
The Waltons.
They just push us back into the closet.
Damn them. But I, you know, I think just us alone being Little House on the Prairie fans, we're already sort of outside of the what's considered the pop culture norm.
Yeah.
And so take that and just blow it up times a thousand. And that's Pamela for you. And I know that in my life, certainly in my childhood, I did feel out of place. I did feel like I didn't fit in. I did sure. feel like I loved things that were not considered current or relevant in pop culture. You know, I was listening to the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel when everyone was listening to New Kids on the Block.
I was a John Lennon fan. I was a John Lennon fan in seventh grade. He had already been dead like 10 years.
Right.
Everybody was like, we don't even know who he is.
People don't appreciate that until you're older. But, you know, when you're a kid or growing up, especially in middle school, I mean, forget it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, long story short, Pamela in Pamela in Living on a Prairie is not me, and also she is me. So
I recently just wrote a fiction book, right? I guess some people would call it a novel. Uh-huh. I call it a fiction book.
Mazel tov. Why wouldn't you call it a novel?
I don't know. I just clearly don't know what it's called. So I wrote this manuscript, and the character is not me, but she is me. Yeah. And you know what she is? She's a hyperbolic version of myself.
Yes, yes.
So it's like all those wild characteristics I have that are bizarre and odd are just heightened. So that's maybe right. It's similar to that.
It's exactly that. And mm-hmm. and also as an actor, you know, an actor plays a gazillion different roles. And the commonality of that is you have to find what you relate to in whatever character you play, because your job is to bring yourself to that role, even if it's right. a completely different transformational version of yourself. But you have to find what you have in common with mm-hmm. whatever character you're playing. Otherwise, you cannot bring authenticity to it.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can't, because how are you supposed to feel like this character if you don't know what it feels like to be this character? So right. that's the work of an actor. Ultimately, that's the work of an actor. And then live in that truth and, you know, listen and respond. But also, I find as a writer, it's exactly that as well. Because you can't write what you kind of don't already have a understanding of. And if you don't have an understanding of it, you have to figure out a way to understand it.
Oh, 100%. So when I was
writing, isn't real or authentic. It doesn't read as real.
When I was doing this book, I was like, okay, this character is this person. This character is my sister. This character, like I give them all those personalities so that I'm able to write from a place of truth. Absolutely.
That's it. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell my sister what character is based on her, though, but we can all guess it. Like somebody walking around dressed in black, like, you know, carrying pewter statues, just being a bitch to everybody.
And it doesn't mean that it is your sister, but it's your understanding of a version of your sister.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
It is your sister. We won't say that out loud. But, you know, also, that's why I feel the difference between you can spot out good writing versus bad writing.
I agree 100%.
Bad writing in a heartbeat. For me, it's because I will read it and go, no one talks that way.
Yes, I agree 100%.
No one.
And I'm somebody who, like, I was raised on a steady diet of soap operas.
Yes.
So I consider myself a dialogue expert.
Yes.
And I could pick up, like, inauthentic dialogue like that. I'm like, nope, nobody talks like that. That would not happen. Like, I've always been so interested in human interaction and the way people interact.
Me too.
If it's fake, I can't do it.
Yeah, and you can sniff it out the second you think that that's not how anyone would actually talk.
Like so many of these Little House episodes, Jenny and I are like, what?
Well.
What? Like by season 9.
Yeah, that one, Laura's infamous. I'm a woman and I'm a woman and I hate you all. Do you have
t-shirts?
Yes. I need this t-shirt.
I'm a woman and I hate all of you.
Yes. Oh my
so
God.
I need tell that us t-shirt. Where can we find Living on a Prairie?
Oh great, thank you. Yes, you can go to the website www.livin, that's with no G, Livin
on Bon Jovi style.
Yes, livingonaprairietv.com. You can also search YouTube for us. I think we're Living on a Prairie on YouTube. But the website is great because it'll give you all the info you need. You can watch the series. And also there are the interviews that I conducted with the original cast members of Little House on the Prairie, who are all, I'm pinching myself saying this, who are all avid fans of Livin' on a Prairie.
Very nice.
So I have
best interview? Who was your favorite? We won't tell them. It'll be our secret. No one listens to this anyway.
Favorite.
Nelly, right?
Well, I will say both Dean Butler and Allison, I mean, they could go on and on and on. They're so generous with their information and their time.
So you know what I do with Delmonzo, right? Hey, everybody. Okay, and the reason I do that is in season 6, his first few appearances, at times they had to weirdly dub his voice and he sounded like Mickey Mouse. Okay, and he hates me, I think.
This is why you're my person. This is why we are meant to be friends, because of those little details.
I think he hates me.
But Dean or Almanzo, I call TV version Almanzo, book version Almanzo. That's my own personal rule. I'm going to stick to it. He's just so generous. He's just, and of course, he's come on as one of the producers for Livin' on a Prairie. So I'm actually working with him.
So we can't talk shit about him. Okay, we love him. No, we love Dean.
I love and adore him. And he's exactly what you want him to be, which is kind and generous and smart.
And you know what? The casting of him to make out with the 16-year-old was not his fault.
He was 15 when he first started.
That was not his fault.
I know.
He probably did the best he could with that.
So
I've seen interviews with him where he talks about that. And he's like,
Well, I talked to him about it.
Maybe I saw yours. And he was kind of like,
I mean, you know, something as a kid I never thought about was like, I always thought about what must it have been like for her to play this sweeping romance with this grown ass adult. But now that I'm an adult, it's sort of flipped to, oh my God, what must it have been like to have been a grown ass adult playing this sweeping romance with a 15-year-old girl?
I know.
I've never been kissed before.
I know. Did you interview her? Did you interview Melissa Gilbert?
No, Melissa Gilbert has not, I'm going to put in parentheses, yet. Agreed to talk to me.
Really?
I'm not going to make up a story. I don't know what it is. I am hoping that a project that myself and the cast of Little House on the Prairie are hopefully going to be working on for the 50th anniversary next year will guarantee that I will have personal contact with her. But, you know, we're going to just keep the optimism going.
Do you follow her little New York journey on Instagram?
Yeah. I mean, she seems better than ever, right?
Yeah, like, she seems great.
She looks amazing.
Yep.
Looks so healthy and beautiful, and she seems like she's in a, now I'm going to talk as if I know her personally, she seems she's in such a good place.
She's in a great place. It's good to see her like this.
Yes, I'm all for, I'm rooting for Melissa Gilbert.
Hey, we grew up with her.
Yeah.
She's ours.
She's ours. And then Allison Arngrim, I mean, you don't have to be interviewing her for her to talk for hours about.
She's amazing.
Amazing stories and experiences.
And we interviewed Karen Grassley.
So how was your experience with that? Because I'll tell you, she was the one interview I was almost puking. I was so nervous to talk to her.
I felt like she was really reserved.
Yeah. She's a classy lady. You know what I mean?
She is. Like, she's classy.
She's all class. Mm-hmm. She also doesn't suffer fools. You know what I mean? So like,
Correct.
I think the fact that she agreed to be interviewed by me because she liked my show and she respected it and she recognized that there was something there was a boon in itself for me. And so I also knew I couldn't waste her time. And I also knew that I wanted to talk to her about things that other people in a general interview with her were not going to talk about, such as, you know, the sexism, the sort of uncouth set culture that was the 70s on
we
that
totally
show.
Talked to her about that. We had to.
And not taking anything away from Michael Landon, but this was part of the culture. God rest his soul. We love him, not disparaging him. But, you know, it was tough. And I
think he was a total product of his time, though. Absolutely. I'm not excusing it.
No,
but that was, exactly. You know, when, like I feel the same way kind of about John Lennon. I love him. I worship him. But if you're a true fan of John Lennon, you know he was an asshole.
He's an awful guy.
Period.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's just it. And you love him, faults and all. And I feel the same way about Michael Landon. Like, people really pushed back on her with her book for disparaging him, quote unquote.
I got sort of hate, a couple of hate messages from, you know, the Michael Landon fan page or whatever.
Yeah.
Because we were disparaging him. We were not disparaging him.
We weren't. And it's not like it's so I feel like it's sort of there's some gray area between the Me Too movement and what Michael Landon did, right? And that gray area is like he was very much a product of his time.
Yes.
I don't think he acted maliciously. No. I don't think
she might argue about that against her.
And I do think he treated her maliciously when their contract thing.
Correct.
But I'm talking about like the sexism on the set and stuff like that. Right. Like, I think that was just the culture, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, no one could actually accuse Michael Lennon of being a racist. Look what he wrote. Look what he actually believed in. It was the culture.
Yeah.
And she was ahead of her game, ahead of her time.
Yes, she was.
And they didn't know how to handle that. And, you know, she had to keep this secret for over 45 years. Could you imagine being sort of abused in the way she was and having this legacy, which is a very beloved but fictitious version of what this experience was?
Well, and I'll tell you, we're doing, and part of what we're doing today is a little viewer's choice. The viewers, we finished the season, we went through season 9. And we decided, hey, everybody, hey, everybody, give us like 2 or 3 episodes you'd like us to go back and cover that we didn't. So, they were all from season 1, 2, and 3. And the contrast between their relationship in those seasons and the later seasons, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
Like in seasons 1 and 2, they're like rolling around in bed together. They're making sex jokes. It's like. And then you get to season 4 or 5, we hardly see her.
Yeah. Yeah. He did her dirty. He really did.
Yeah, he did.
And which is also a shame because that character should have had so much more than what she was given.
Yeah.
You know, a wife on the prairie. And listen, we also know that as the years went on, the story got more fairy tale than realistic.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, we love it. That's great. Yeah. But Ma should have had way more substance than she did. And I actually now watching her, knowing what I know, I watch her performance and sort of marvel by how graceful she is, by how she took kind of these, you know, she's always serving food or she's always, it's very archetypal. And she played it very smartly as an actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't really realize that until maybe when you're older or as an actor, when you look at, look at the material she actually had to make work.
Well, it's so funny because you feel like her, and we'll get to our episode. I'm sorry, guys, I'm chit-chatting, but you feel like her character is kind of antithetical to who she is at her core, right?
Absolutely.
But you feel like Michael Landon's character is kind of dead on.
I absolutely agree. And let me tell you, this is another fun thing that happened. This summer, I was in the Bay Area. And I contacted Karen and I said, hey, I'm here. I'd love to meet you in person if you're up to it. And she invited me over to her house. And so I went over. I was with my aunt who lives out there. And I brought my aunt with me. And she had us over for tea and cookies and snacks in her beautiful home.
Wow.
And we talked for a couple of hours. And she is, she's just wonderful.
Yeah.
She's just wonderful.
She was a feminist before, you know, it was really cool to do.
Yeah, totally. So imagine being that kind of feminist in the 70s and having to put up with all of that crap. It's tough. And then being written a character to deny that character anything deeper than just being a happy homemaker.
Right. Like, I want to see her beating the shit out of Mary, getting all those cows out of the barn, crisis hair down, potentially banging there. The handyman. I want to see all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although that handyman,
I'm all for the handyman.
No, he's a two-bit paw wannabe. Okay. So today we are covering Little House on the Prairie, Season 1, Episode 9, Ma's Holiday, or as I call it, Ma's Bang Trip.
Yes.
Yes. Reads, while on a second honeymoon with Charles in Mankato, Carolyn can't help worrying about what's happening back home in Walnut Grove, where old friend Mr. Edwards finds that babysitting three active little girls, not as simple as it seems. Okay. All right, here we go, Pamela. Interject when you need to.
Okay.
Summary here. So we open on the family at breakfast, and Mary is already narking people out. She's narking out Willie. She's like, Miss Beadle had to make him stay after class for 3 days in a row because of talking. And I will say this. I was always in trouble for talking in school. Were you? I was always.
I remember my parents, when they had a parent-teacher conference. This is in fourth grade, I think. They told my parents that my problem was I raised my hand too much. And they were like, what's the problem with that? And they were like, well, she wants to participate and she always wants to, you know, answer questions and it's not fair to the other kids.
But were you doing the like arm up going, oh,
Mr. Cotter. I don't know if I was doing that, but yeah, I got the she's too involved comment.
Okay. Right. That's such a Gen X thing. Like, stop being involved in school.
Yeah. Stop being.
Just
so
sit
bright.
There and shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Paul looks amazing. Now, I want to talk about when you think Paul is at his hottest.
Oh.
Okay. Because there's season one, Paul, let me remind you, fallen out of the tree.
Yes. Chest.
Season two, Paul, he's got the pink striped shirt on, the suspenders, the lifts.
Yes.
Looking real hot. Season three, he's starting to get a little gray. By season four, you know, I've lost interest by season four.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I never lost interest in Paul, but I will say.
I never lost interest, but I'm saying his hotness peaked for me.
Hot-o-meter.
Season three. Yeah.
I will say he looked damn good in this episode. I mean, he looked so good in this episode. Now, I have to say, as a kid, I always recognized that Pa was gorgeous, but yes. I did have the fatherly version of him in my heart.
Yes.
As an adult, that has flipped into the more husbandly version.
Yes.
Of him.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, the man knew what the hell he was doing. We'll get to the shirtless moment with him in this episode, which is so much. He just looks amazing.
He looks amazing all the time.
I don't know if there's a season where I think he's peaked. I'm a consistent pa.
But
person.
Would you say this is, we're in the golden era right now. I mean, season one is.
I would say season, I don't know. I don't know. I'll have to revisit the yearly paw differences.
Just watch like the pilot episode from every season.
Yeah, yeah.
And exactly. Then, you know, come in with the judgment because you have nothing else to do. So just get on that.
That's a challenge I do not mind doing. All right. Challenge accepted.
So I wrote, Paul looks amazing. He says he's taking a trip to Mankato and he thinks Ma should come along with him and have herself a holiday. And I love when she's like, oh, Charles. Like, she does it all the time. The girls are like, go, Ma, we'll be fine. And Laura, so fucking cute, has a little milk mustache.
Yes, she does.
Oh, these girls are so cute in this episode. So Carolyn says, Charles, you can't expect me to go traipsing off. Now, traipsing was a favorite word of my grandmother's. Traipsing. She used to talk about my grandfather, who was a drinker. But anyone was a drinker compared to my grandmother, who once had a sip of something and got drunk for 6 weeks. She would say he would go traipsing all over town, which meant like he was just going to the local bar down the street.
Right.
Whatever. So she says, you can't expect me to go traipsing off and leave three girls on the prairie. And he's like, I'll have Grace look in on them. But Carolyn's like, I don't think it's appropriate to have another woman move in. Now, I would have another woman move in and take care of my kids.
1,000%.
Mm-hmm. And he says, Well, I already asked her, and guess what? It's happening. So Ma and Pa are officially going on a bang trip.
Now, here's my thoughts during this entire conversation.
Okay.
Is she really wrong? Like, this is when, like, not the TV fiction versus what the actual reality of that situation.
Yes.
That's when it's like, Michael Landon, come on. Like, you would not leave three children alone on the prairie, even if another adult was with them. Like, you wouldn't. Well, that is dangerous.
Okay, so later I wrote this, but I'll bring it up now. Think of how hard this would have been. Like, you can't call to check in.
Nope.
You have no idea. You literally have to hope everybody's alive when you get home.
Yeah, and also, like, I would assume, and also based on what it seems like from the books, like, this was hard living.
Yeah.
This was not, like, suburban modern day crap. This was,
they could get little housed at any moment. Any moment any that moment. House could collapse right on yes. top of them.
Yes, they could get little housed at any moment.
Oh
yeah,
my
so
God.
I think she's absolutely right in being like, hell to the no, I'm not leaving them
but
alone.
But then, Pamela, you have Charles asking you to go on a bang trip.
I know. And they do share a very small house and don't have any privacy right. whatsoever.
Right. I've talked about this many times. I think they have to sneak out to the drama bar.
They have to.
They have
There's
to.
No way.
All right. So Charles takes a ride out to the Edwards and there's Grace. And it's the worst acting ever where she pretends she has a sore throat.
I mean, the choice. It's a bold choice.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That mm-hmm. way. But she must have obviously been directed to do it that extreme.
I'm sure it's against her will because we've seen her act in other things and she's a perfectly fine actress.
Yes. Yes.
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, my Siri doesn't even understand. I don't know how that activated. That is so funny. Siri agrees with me.
So Grace is basically like, I'm sorry I screwed you.
Right. Totally. And again, no phones to let them know in advance.
Nope, no phones. So Charles gets back on the wagon. He's heartbroken. Yes. And he heads home to break the news. Meanwhile, Carolyn's in the house. She's getting the girls all ready. And Pa arrives alone. And they're all like, oh, shit. And Pa's like, not happening. And Ma's like, it's probably for the best. And then we hear old Dan Tucker being whistled. Now, is he just walking by?
Yeah, why is he here? What's he doing?
I thought maybe he was going to, like, come over and be like, oh, Charles, Grace told me you're screwed. Let me help you out. But it seemed like he was just walking by.
Just a random visit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the girls run to Mr. Edwards and they're like, can you stay with us? And he says, if you behave yourselves and mind what you're told, I'll stay with you. I can't imagine any situation on earth where I'm leaving Mr. Edwards with my kids.
No, the whole thing is a little, oh God. Here's when my current day adult parent mind
catches up.
First, the Little House on the Prairie bubble that I wish I could still have as childlike eyes. And maybe I've been watching too many or listening to too many true crime podcasts. But leaving that man with three small girls mm-hmm, mm-hmm. would never in a million years happen for me.
Would never happen for me. Never.
Edwards, we love him, but no. Nope.
Nope, 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 nope. Okay. So Edwards and
Carolyn doesn't like it either.
She is so uncomfortable with this situation.
Super uncomfortable.
They run in the house. They tell Ma the good news. And Carolyn's like, well, maybe they were boys. And then she's like, don't you have to work?
Well, that's so funny. When she was like, maybe if they were boys, I was like, yes. And then I realized she was talking about that they could be stronger farmhands for him. But I was like, no, I don't care about that.
It would just be more appropriate.
Yes, totally.
So Edwards is like, I got this. Don't worry. And I just wrote, Pa is real horned up over this bang trip. Like, he is raring to go. Gonna make it happen.
Gonna make another baby.
Yep. You know, now that I think about it, I'm shocked he didn't recast her. Like, I'm glad he didn't. But I'm shocked he didn't.
Could he have? Like, would the audience have accepted that? I don't think so. She probably also signed, like, a 7-year contract when she got the job.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm talking out of my butt. I don't know if this is real or not. But he might not have been able to break her contract.
Maybe.
But also, I just don't know how that would have worked.
I think if they did it early enough, like in season three, it would have worked, but really? I would have been devastated.
I think everyone would have been devastated. You know, it's interesting too, is that hearing from so many fans of the show, how even with her part not being written as fully formed as we would have liked her to be, so many fans adored her.
I know. I adored her.
And so many people needed that caring, kind, simple mother figure in their lives.
See, and now this is interesting because I'm going to tell you something. I never saw her as that. So when I was growing up, she reminded me a lot of my mother. And when I was young, I imagined my mother as like this tough, steely, resolve woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't get the kind, caring, like Carolyn was not soft in my opinion. Like in my retrospect.
Yeah.
She was fucking hard as nails, you know, and a great mother for that. But she was like some kind of really tough figure. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's interesting because she also reminded me of my mother, and this is the positives of it. In her kindness and in her sensitivity, I was very lucky to have a mother like that. But she also kind of sounded, and she didn't look like my mother, but there was a lot of similarities between the two physically, as well as her voice had a quality that my mother also had. But it's interesting. So I actually was trying to figure this out a couple years ago, and I sort of went on the fan pages on Facebook and asked. And I said, you know, I understand if you came from a not so nice household, you know, whether you had abusive parents, whether you were in the foster care system, whether, you know, whatever it was, and that you gravitated towards Ma and Pa, but Ma, especially because she filled that gap of what you didn't have in your life. But it's also interesting that people who had really good childhoods also gravitated towards her.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the one thing too, like no one is that happy all the time, especially no one is that happy to be with their kids 24/7.
No. Nobody is working their ass. My husband's a union carpenter. He works his ass off. When he comes home, he doesn't want to like regale us with fiddle playing or sit around and read poetry to us.
God love him.
He's tired.
He's tired. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. At dinner, Edwards is regaling the girls with tales of his near-death accidents, including a tree falling on him, him becoming a blood brother to some indigenous peoples, and he also tries to tell them that he is Sitting Bull. And Carrie gives Jack some of her food, and Mary narcs her out. And I wrote, Mary's probably writing down everything that everybody's doing wrong so she can give a full report to Mom when she gets back. So the girls start doing the dishes, and Mary's telling Laura the story that they've been told about Custer's last stand in Sitting Bull.
Yo, aim.
Oh, God.
Yo.
What, Jenny, what?
I have an index card.
God, I hate you so much.
You said custard. Come on.
Even though you're 300 miles away from me and not on.
Dude, you know I love this shit.
All right.
What was Custard's last stand? So Custard's last stand, and it's Custer. I don't know if people love to say custard, but no, it's Custer. Was during the Battle of Little Bighorn in 1876, known to the Plains Native Americans as the Battle of Greasy Grass.
Grass.
Okay. But it's more commonly referred to as Custer's last stand. It was an armed engagement between the Lakota Sioux, which we hear about all the time in Little House.
Yep.
Northern Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. I probably said that wrong. And the 7th Cavalry Regiment of the U.S. Army. By the way, I cannot spell cavalry, just so you know. I spelled it 16 different ways. Okay. The battle, which resulted in the defeat of the U.S. Army, was the most significant action of the Great Sioux War in 1876. The fight was an overwhelming victory. The fight was an overwhelming victory led by Chief Gall and Crazy Horse and had been inspired by the visions of Sitting Bull. Five of the 7th Cavalry's 11 companies were wiped out. Custer, two of his brothers, a nephew, and a brother-in-law were all killed. The Great Sioux War was largely caused because of the tensions. The tensions were rising from the U.S. squeezing Native American tribes into smaller and smaller areas known as reservations, stealing their land and depriving them of their livelihoods. Mainly, this was hunting the buffalo. Mm-hmm. So how the battle kind of... So first of all, you have to know something about Custer. He was kind of like a fuck up. The dude was like, he graduated like last in his class from like West Point. He like married somebody who had some like political standing. So like he was able to get like some posts in the military. What helped him was the Civil War was just breaking out when he was leaving West Point. Okay. So like they just needed people. And he was like, me. So he was in the Battle of Gettysburg. He did fight for the Union. I had to look that up because I wasn't quite sure what side he landed on in that. He is from Ohio, but I don't know. I just always think of him as like a little bit problematic.
Right.
So he did rise to like a high command just because he happened to be there. Like he wasn't the best general in the world, or the best commander in the world. So the great in this battle, how this went on the evening of June 24th, Custer's scout arrives at the outlook. So they would employ Native Americans as scouts so that they wouldn't get caught. The overlook was called the Crow's Nest. They reported seeing a massive pony herd and signs of the Native American village. So the scouts would have been out perhaps a day ahead of the army, right? And they're just like surveying the land, checking out what's going on.
Right.
So after a night's march, a tired officer reports that he could see neither the pony herd or the signs of the village. Custer confirmed this. So the army gets there the next day and they're saying, we can't see this. Mm-hmm. But then the scouts were, you know, further out ahead of them. And they're like, yo, we could see your cooking fires. Like you're giving away your location.
Yeah.
Custer was planning a surprise attack, but then they received a report that they had been discovered by hostiles on the trail left by his troops. So they ran into a group of Native Americans on the trail that they had left behind. So they assumed they had been, their position was known by the Native Americans. The group of Native Americans, however, were actually leaving and hadn't alerted the village, but Custer didn't know this.
Oh, okay.
Even though warned that the village was the largest they had ever seen, this is the Native American scouts, he thought it was not a lot. Custer assumed, again, because he couldn't see, like, you know, they didn't have the best equipment to, like, see far away at this time.
Yeah.
For some reason, he assumed it was a lot of women and children and not a like a lot of warriors. I don't know why he'd think that.
Yeah, I don't know why either. And it disturbs me that he was like, oh, let's just go in because they're all women and children.
And then like their scouts were sent out. They kept getting spotted. Yada, yada, yada. He dismissed the scout. They charge. And then, of course, there's a giant force of like really skilled warriors. And there's chaos and they're defeated. And I told you him and like half of his family were killed. So it didn't end very well for him. But ultimately, you know, ultimately we were successful in that we, as in the U.S. Army.
Yeah. Don't lump me in with that. We.
Yeah. Not me. I mean, we're all part of that though.
Yeah, I know. All right, Jenny, go back to your cave or wherever the hell you.
Whatever. Stop talking about American history without me.
Yeah. Okay. Get some acting lessons while you're at it. Bye. So Mary and Laura then put Carrie to bed, and they want a story from Edwards. And I just wrote, "Can we cut to Mankato already and see what's going on in the bank trip? I don't want this." All right. Now finally, we get to Ma and Pa, and they're sleeping outside by a fire. What are your thoughts here?
Okay. Well, first of all, I have a couple of questions. One, how can Pa actually go away for an entire week? Like, isn't he supposed to be farming? How does that work?
I don't know. Jenny and I talk about this all the time. Like, we thought they were destitute, especially in these early seasons.
No, exactly. So, like, how are they going to a restaurant? How are they buying tickets to a show? How are they buying a bonnet for Ma? I don't get it. Mm-mm. That's one question. Second question is, can someone please explain to me what's going on with Carrie's hair? Because it is chopped up. Like, short in the front, party in the back, but not even anywhere. And then it's sort of like balayage on the ends. Why didn't they just cut her hair so it was even?
So
it's so confusing to me. What is that?
So I watched, Jenny and I are covering next week, The Last Farewell, the movie where they blow up the houses.
Oh boy.
And I got a shot of Rose, and she was about Carrie's age, as Carrie is here now. Okay. And I noticed how similar they look. I'm thinking it's a hairstylist on the set because they both had the blunt cut bangs. But then I noticed Carrie kind of has like far away eyes. You know what I mean? Like that Rolling Stone song. Like she's a little bit like, what's going on over there? Like she's just not as
I call her, oh, Carrie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. Yep. But I agree with you. So when we're at the fire, though, Ma has crisis hair.
Ma has, yes, her hair is definite. Yes.
It's crisis also, like, hair, but it's also known as sexy hair.
It's a sexy, beautiful, sexy hair. Mm-hmm. And also, like, her bare arms, that might as well be equivalent to her being completely topless. It is so shocking to see her with those bare arms. And I mean, it's the only time we ever see her that way. And it's truly shocking to see
it's those shocking.
Bare arms
it's shocking.
On her. Mm-hmm. And it's so freaking sexy, the two of them. Not doing anything. it's so weird.
It's so hot just to watch them lying next to each other.
Yes, and the setup is so romantic and hot, and they both look so good. And she has her bare arms and the sex hair, and they're like pilgrims in this scene.
They're not banging. Because she's like, she wakes up in a cold sweat thinking about the eggs and how she doesn't want the girls to forget them. And Charles decides he's going to bribe her not to think about or talk about the girls any longer. And if she sticks to this, he'll buy her a bonnet. Which is
with
like...
What? Wow. With what money?
With what?
Yeah. Poor Pa. Pa's getting a little frustrated.
So here. Cut to the house and Carrie is screaming, crying.
Okay. This is what I want to know.
Okay.
She was actually really crying in this scene.
Yeah.
And I want to know what horrible thing
did somebody pinch her?
Girl. Yeah. What did they do to her to get her to cry? Because that was a real cry. And I actually was like, oh my God, what did they do to her?
Yeah. She was really crying.
It was heartbreaking, actually. And as much as I rag on Carrie, and I do rag on her all the time, mm-hmm. there are certain mm-hmm. moments where you're like, oh, Carrie.
I know.
And this was a moment where I was like, oh, this
agree.
This little girl.
I agree. This would the way that Edwards handles this though is very similar to how my sister would handle it. He comes out and he looks at her and he's like, "Okay, what's this?
Yeah,
what is this?" And she's like, she's just sobbing. And he's like, "Are you hungry? I'll make some dinner." And then he's going, "There has to be a better system than this. A man just can't be getting up in the middle of the night." And he turns around and she's gone.
Right.
And she's in her bed sleeping. We don't know what this was about.
No, maybe
Michael Landon put her in that chair, pinched her thigh, and rolled tape.
I actually thought, I mean, it's certainly not against any of my maternal parenting, you know, instincts to be like, what's this? Come on.
Yeah, what the hell's going on?
I will say, like, he was very, very sweet. And it was
I love him.
Endearing.
I love him. Yes.
But, you know, hug the little girl.
He's doing his best.
He is. I'm not mad at him. I am not mad at him.
I don't know if she would want a hug, because if you notice in the last scene when he leaves, he has the same clothes on, has never taken a bath, and it's been like 4 days.
So. He wears the same thing every day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you imagine what he smells like?
Yeah, I know. And he looks like he smells, too. Yes, that's the thing. I mean, I love Mr. Edwards, but he looks like he smells.
Yes, he does. So the next day, the girls oversleep, they run to school, and Edwards is chilling at home with Carrie. We see some hijinks with Edwards trying to hang the sheets out, Carrie's pulling them down into the dirt, then she ties herself to a pole. Like, none of this is surprising.
No.
We see them walking down a hill, Jack starts to go bananas, it's a rattlesnake, Edwards shoots it and makes a soup from it. Now the girls are home, and they take one whiff of this, quote, engine stew that he's making. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And they want to vomit all over the place. And I can't even imagine what this freaking tastes like. He said he learned it from some Sioux Indians and then added some of his own stuff in.
Uh-huh.
I think that's where you went wrong, Edwards.
Yeah.
Because what is he adding in?
He's probably adding in like pepper and Tabasco or something like that.
Oh, yeah, right? You're probably right. Yeah. So meanwhile in Mankato, Charles and Carolyn are at a fancy restaurant. Carolyn loves the food, and she says, you know, I sure hope the girls are being well fed. Meanwhile, Mary and Laura are literally choking this down, and Carrie's like feeding it to Jack, and even he doesn't want it.
So I have, and I did as a kid, and I was surprised, but that I had the same exact response to this part as an adult. This scene repulses the crud out of me. I am someone that's really grossed out by snakes. Like, I really have an aversion to snakes.
Yeah.
And so seeing it being blown, its head being blown off, then him dangling this dead snake in his hand is already like, cringe factor.
Do we think they really shot it?
It would not surprise me. I know. I was going to say, like, no, of course they didn't, but it was the 70s, mm-hmm, and I don't know. They might very well might have.
They might have.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And then watching them eat, watching Carrie slurp chew with it running out of her mouth, what I'm imagining, what is supposed to be the snake meat, just disgusts me to, like, it revolts me, like it makes me feel sick to my stomach.
Yeah, whole new level.
A whole level. So this scene always, like, made me kind of pukey. I wouldn't want to eat it either.
So on the bang trip. No, I'm wrong. That night, Edwards is reading the girls a story, and he's winging it because he doesn't know how to read. And everyone knows this.
Yeah.
But I forgot that. I guess I forgot it was this early.
Yeah, I forgot too. I totally forgot. And when I rewatch it, I was like,
because Laura teaches him, right?
I think so. He does learn to read eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And he becomes fluent in sign language in season 9.
Yes, so, he sure does.
Like overnight.
Yep.
So on the bang trip, Carrie gets up and she thinks she hears Carrie crying. She's like, Carrie, Carrie. And we have shirtless Paul.
Oh my God. It's so, I mean, it truly is a stand up and clap moment. He looks particularly beautiful.
He is glowing.
We've seen him chestless before, but there is something about this particular scene that he looks indescribably gorgeous. Now, she is not sleeveless in this one. So right, he's got the top off this time. Mm-hmm. She's got it on.
I'm so glad to have a fellow Paul lover to talk about this scene, to break this out me.
Well, it's a hard scene to watch because the man just wants some action and she is so not interested.
I know.
It's bizarro. Like, why couldn't they have given Ma a little sex appeal,
a
right?
Little something.
Just something. It's just not fair to deny that character some human.
Like they could have just had them like kiss and then fade to black.
Yes.
So we know they're banging. But this was nothing. Nothing.
No, no. Not only was this nothing, the scene literally ends with Pa sexually frustrated, eyes open, back in bed with his wife sleeping next to him. Like, it's a whole scene.
Do we think he was secretly jerking off under the covers?
He had to.
He had to.
I mean, he had to, poor guy. You saw the blue balls.
He's like, I spent all that goddamn money on that fucking bonnet. Oh, no, he didn't buy the bonnet yet. I promised the bonnet. I bought you that dinner.
But also, like, when else are they going to have any kind of alone time, let alone in a beautiful bed in a hotel?
I know. Like, I know.
Give me a break.
Anyone who's ever had kids.
Yeah, that's what he said. Give me a break.
Anyone who's ever had kids knows the value of a good hotel when those kids are young.
Right.
You go to that hotel.
Go and enjoy that hotel.
Okay, so at home, there's a storm and Mary and Laura can't sleep. So Mary realizes Edwards doesn't know how to read. They talk about it. And then Laura realizes they forgot the eggs. And if they forget, a hen could sit on them and they'll go bad. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Jenny and I know nothing about wildlife. I don't know if this is true. I didn't even know how an egg came out. I have no idea.
It seems weird that the egg would go bad. Maybe if the hen sits on them, they start to develop. And you want to get them before they start developing?
Maybe.
That's my only takeaway. And God, it's shameful. I don't know anything about this. So I'm sorry.
Don't
listeners.
Worry. Our listeners will correct me. They'll correct us. All right. So they light a lamp, even though they're not supposed to. Mary's very quick to point that out.
Well, Mary starts some fires with those lamps.
Yes, she does. They head out to the chicken coop and Mary's apprehensive. She wants to wake up Edwards. Now the hens start freaking out. Edwards gets up. He hears this. Goes over.
P.S. Why didn't they? What? Of course they should have woken up Edwards.
And it's so dumb because he looks out and there are literally like two little people with hair bonnets on.
Yes.
It doesn't occur to you that's Laura and Mary?
They're clearly Laura and Mary.
Right. But he decides he's going to get a shotgun and he's going to, you know, think about how wrong this could have went.
And this is the part where Mr. Edwards kills the Ingalls girls. The end. Being like, wow, that would have taken it. That would have been a whole different story.
It's like The Walking Dead. Like, look at the flowers. Yes. Like, just. Okay. So they come in. They startle him. He shoots a hole in the roof. This is the hijinks.
That's a powerful bullet because a big portion of that roof came off.
Yes. It's a shotgun.
He
would have destroyed those two girls if he shot them. Oh my God. So he starts yelling at them. Mary starts crying. He sends them to bed. Now on the bang trip, we see Carolyn in a store and she's trying on a new bonnet. It's $2.50. And Carolyn's like, oh, it's too extravagant. I can't do it. I can't do it.
It is. Where do they have $2.50?
I know. They could Charles has sold the farm 18 times in season one. So as they're in this shop, things go real dark because this woman comes in. She's like, have you seen my kids? And the shopkeeper's like, no, I haven't. Then the woman leaves and the shopkeeper's like, oh, her kids are dead. They died in a fire because she left them.
In a wicked twist. Yes.
Oh my God. You know, this actually happened to somebody in my family.
Oh no.
Like one of my father's like distant cousins, the mother was a single mother and she wanted to go out for the night. So she had like a neighbor come over and babysit. And they all got gassed from the stove. And so she came home because, again, no phones, right? It's like the 40s. And her entire family is dead. And the neighbor.
Oh my God.
You imagine?
No, I couldn't. And I actually thought after I watched this scene, like, oh, yeah, I'd be that crazy lady if something like that happened to me.
Yeah, because you would just, like, shut it off in your brain.
Absolutely.
Yep. So Carolyn's like, I don't feel so good right now because Edwards. And you know what? Good for her mother's intuition because Edwards almost did just shoot your children.
That's
so there
correct.
You go. So
also,
they
just talk about how ridiculous this bonnet would have been had she bought it.
It's
like
it was
fancier than any of Harriet Olsen's bonnets. Like,
and it's pink, right? It was pink.
What? Was it purple?
Pinkish purple? Carolyn wears blue. She's in the blues.
Yeah, and browns. Blues and brown. Yes. But it so wasn't practical. And there's no way, even like at a country dance, if you want to dress up, she still wouldn't have worn that bonnet on the prairie.
Although, it would have matched Paw's pink striped shirt.
True.
That would have been
and
nice.
And they could have it in sweet, sweet, sexy time. Alone
she could
time
be wearing only the bonnet. And they could be dancing. Okay. So at home, Edwards is repairing the roof. What's that?
Put some popcorn in the bonnet. That'll be their goal.
At home, Edwards is repairing the roof, and he suddenly realizes he's lost sight of Carrie. And I just wrote, she's a huge pain in the ass.
She sure is. So I mean, I will give it to her in this episode. She had a few very authentically sweet moments where I was like, oh, Carrie. And
okay, then, you said that, not me.
Then she's back to being, oh, Carrie.
So he's like, he's in a complete panic. We all know this panic. Yes. I don't know if you've ever had a moment where like your kid is out of your sight or something and you just panic.
Yes, it's awful.
He has this panic and then all of a sudden she's like, boo, pops out from under the bed. Like, I would have beat the shit out of her.
I know, you just want to smack her.
So then we see he has Carrie on the roof and Laura and Mary are coming home from school and they're like, oh no, 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 no. And he's like, oh, it's fine. I nailed her dress to the roof. Now, I don't know much about science, but I do know she could still fly out of that and the dress would rip.
Yeah, fabric rips every now and then.
Yeah.
But I will say, I feel like this moment with her on the roof, I feel like that's that image, I feel like sort of is an iconic Little House moment.
Of her on the roof?
Yes. For some reason in my brain, that stands out as being like, oh yeah, here's an iconic moment.
Okay.
With her nailed to the roof with Mr. Edward. Maybe that's just me.
Oh, classic Isaiah.
Yeah, classic. Correct.
So now Carolyn and Charles are going to see a play to take their minds off of, again, spending money like it's water.
Yep.
And they end up, it ends up being a play called Abandoned Daughters.
Buy Ma a stove with this money, for God's sake.
There we go. There we go.
Sorry, back to the money thing. Okay, here we go. Back to the play.
Carolyn cries the entire time because there's this kid on stage who's like, oh, I miss my mother. Why did you leave us? It's if Carrie was like multiplied by five, that's this kid on the stage. And Carolyn's crying and Pa's like, okay. We'll leave for home first thing in the morning.
Okay, here's a fun, what I guarantee is a fact I never realized, and I wouldn't have realized had I not just recently listened to Mo Rocca's podcast.
Oh, okay, I love
him so much.
Me too.
He has a podcast called Mobituaries, and he features one person who's now deceased.
Oh, wow.
Sort of like their biography. Mm-hmm. He did an episode about a woman named June Foray, who was the female Mel Blanc of her time. So Mel Blanc being the voice, the man of a thousand voices, yep. Bugs Bunny and everything. So she was the woman that did every voice that was never credited. That's why we don't know what her name is.
Okay.
So she did the voices of like Rocky and Bullwinkle, and all of those voices were hers. This is her voice doing all of those play characters.
Really?
If you listen to it, you're like, oh, that's Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh my God. Now I'm going to have to go back. I'm going to have to go back.
And it's the first time I realized that because I never knew who she was. So when I listened to that scene, I was like, oh my God, that's June Foray. That's her. Like, that's her voice. So they clearly hired her to come in to do all of these character voices for this play that they were watching. So that was just sort of a little like fun fact. And I looked in the credits after to see if they credited. They did not credit her.
Of course. Of course.
But it's interesting that they didn't use Alison Arngrim's mother, who is also a famous voiceover artist.
Yeah.
Who did voice of Casper and Gumby and all of those people. Hmm. But it was, I mean, I will bet my life on it that this is June Foray doing those voices.
That's awesome.
Just fun fact. I don't know if anyone else is interested.
I'm going to listen to Mobituaries.
It's great. It's a great podcast.
Right up my alley.
It's great.
Okay. So Carolyn and Pa are now driving home and she's like, are you disappointed? Yes, he's disappointed.
Yes.
He wanted to have sex one time. One time.
Yeah.
Mary threatening to narc him out and run downstairs, or without
Carrie in an open plan bedroom.
So she said, I didn't even earn my bonnet because I talked and worried about the children the whole time. And Paul, being the gracious Paul that he is, he's just like, it's fine. It's fine. Yep. You know, I took care of myself under those covers the other night. Yep. I'm good.
Yep.
So at home, the girls are riding Edwards around like a horse. Do you remember doing that when you were a kid? Like, there would be an adult that you would ride around like a horse.
I remember that. And I also, watching this, thought, like, God bless him. Like, God bless any adult that has enough energy. And he's doing this as a favor to them, too. And he still wants to roughhouse like that.
I know. And he's probably, like, in his mid-40s. And at that time, that was, like, 70.
Yeah. And he's taking care of all these kids. And he just had to repair the roof and take care of a farm and whatever. And, you know, do the washing. Hey, can we just shout out and agree that probably the best invention of the 20th century was the washing machine?
Oh, my God.
Tied with the vacuum.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
I mean, whew.
So, okay,
back to Edwards.
He throws out his back, and he's like, this has happened before, and the last time I just cussed a lot. And Laura goes, we can go outside.
Best line of that episode. When she's like, well, they went, well, what did you do last time? And they're like, well, I recall I cussed a lot. I thought, that is a great freaking line. Audibly laughed at that one. It was a fantastic line. And the way that he did it was so good.
He's amazing. I love him.
Yeah.
So at Nell's,
he's an incredible actor.
Now we're at the Mercantile. Speaking of incredible actors, I love Nell's and Harriet so much. I mean, I hate Harriet, but I love her.
She's a genius. Mm-hmm. She's a genius. And he's so wonderful too.
Yeah.
Did he die
shortly after the show? He's not alive, right? No,
he's not. I think he lasted a while.
A little bit? Okay.
Yeah.
Nell's just always seemed to me like he was 80.
Yeah. Well, so many, I think we've all gotten more youthful as the decades have gone on. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Is the new 30, 60 is the new 40.
Well, that's what like skincare and stuff will do for you.
Yeah. You know, I've been watching, I'm revisiting All in the Family.
Oh,
I thought that would be, I loved that show and I thought this would be interesting to revisit it. So I started from season one. I'm in the middle of season two now. And there was a scene in it the other day. Well, first of all, Archie Bunker is in his 40s.
I was just going to say the Bunkers are like, Archie needed, they're like 40.
They're in their later 40s, which is just insane to me. Yes. Insane to me.
I know.
The Golden Girls were like 50. Supposed to be about 50 years old. Mm-hmm. So age is just...
We talk about that all the time. Because you'll see somebody and you're like, oh, I think they're 70, but they're probably 35.
Yes, it is crazy. I was watching an episode of The Golden Girls the other night, and it was like Blanche's brother came to visit, and he looked well into his 50s, at least mid-50s, at least, minimum. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you're 45 years old. And I thought, oh, God.
You died a little bit inside.
Yeah, died a lot inside.
So we go to Nell's, and Laura comes in with the eggs and tells Nell's, my mom will be back tomorrow, but Nell's is like, actually, they're right there.
Yeah.
And Laura's like, oh, shit. And she tells Nell's, like, can you stall them? I got to run home and warn everybody. Now, do you remember doing this kind of stuff? Like, somebody was coming over or mom was coming home and you had to, like, do the scramble to get your room clean? You just threw everything in the closet?
Well into my college years. Yes.
Jenny would probably say she does it now when my mom and I are on our way to her apartment. So they arrive home and everybody's like hugging them and loving them. I always say one of my favorite parts of Little House always was when Paul would come down that driveway and Carolyn would come running out of the house and he would pick her up and twirl her around. You know, that was so great. But now we see like the kids greeting him and poor Edwards is just hunched over the water barrel like, ooh, I'm in a lot of pain here. Charles says the trip was great and, you know, they didn't worry at all.
Lies.
Then he pats Edwards on the back real hard and Edwards just leaves. And I wrote, wait a minute, did he only have those clothes? He didn't have his long johns or anything?
Well, no, he had nothing because he just walked up to the house that day and then stayed for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
He had nothing with him. He
had
nothing.
Imagine just living that kind of existence.
No, also, like, what kind of shithole must he been living in for him to happily be like, I'm staying here for the week, no problem.
Yeah, it's wild. Well, so this is season one. Did he have the still out in the back of his house yet? I don't know.
Oh, that's
We don't see him drinking.
No.
No. Mm-mm. Hmm. All right, so at the end of every episode, we look back on theme or a lesson, something we take from the rewatch, or something we remember from when we first saw the episode. We called our why. It's designed to finish the sentence, Gen X, this is why. So I'll go with my why, and then we'll come to you.
Okay.
So my why is, this is why we always thought bang trips were important. Because we didn't always think that. I was not thinking about bang trip when I was a kid. But revisiting this as an adult, I am like, and I'm not even saying, like, oh, the sex-starved man. Like, it's not that. It's Carolyn, too. Like, they deserved some intimacy and couple time away from these kids. Like, that is something that is, I think, a progression that we have made that I'm really grateful for, is that we have started to understand that women especially have to be separate from their kids at times. And I'm really grateful for that. And we see that. Like, we see Charles trying to get her to be separate from them and to be herself. And even though it's for selfish reasons of wanting to have this bang trip or whatever, I still think he's trying to care for her in a way. And she's just not letting him. And I get it. I get it. It's an impulse we all have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think bang trips
are
important.
Probably when you're isolated on a prairie and your kids are the only thing you have, I'm sure the attachment is much more intense. But
my grandmother was like this. Her kids were her entire life.
Everything, yeah.
And then we were her entire life. And then my kids were her entire life. Like, it just, she was widowed when she was 40. So it was like, we were just, you know what I mean? Her entire existence. All right, Pamela, let's hear. What is your why for this?
Well, I mean, mine is similar to yours of like how my why is how important it is to maintain your relationship with your partner that is separate from your parenting roles.
100%.
Because that's, you could easily become roommates and partners. And when you're with sexy, chesty Charles, you know, who wants to be just roommates with that?
Not
and
me.
She's perfectly fine. She's too preoccupied with the kids.
Oh my God. So, it's just, he's so stunning. I'd be chasing him around in the fields.
Yeah, no, he's stunning. I recently just discovered this past year that people think Doc Baker is hot, which is not.
No, no.
I know. I cannot get behind it.
It's the hot doc thing, right?
That you're talking about. I know. Hot doc. Ugh.
No. Mm-mm. Nope. I don't know if you've heard us talk about, we rag on him a lot. Okay. Like, we love him as an actor. But we rag on him because we said he just does ocular pat downs. Like, he's just like, oh, well, you're either going to live or maybe you won't. We don't know. Time will tell.
Or he knows something that no country doctor should ever know. That's like way advanced. You're like, how do you know that, Doc?
No, I know.
He's a genius.
All right, so that's all we have for today. I want to thank you so much.
I want to thank you so much. I just adore you. I love the podcast. I love what you guys have been doing. It's so fun talking to you, and I want to keep talking to you even if you don't do the podcast anymore.
Well, what we're going to start doing is we're going to do a monthly podcast, and we're going to still talk about Gen X stuff. So we're going to do, like, we have this little sub-series we do, like Gen X That Was a Thing, where we talk about, you know, cultural milestones from Gen X, stuff like that. So we're going to be doing stuff. It just won't be weekly.
I'm so glad. It's such a unique voice, and it's just so much fun, and it's so nice to talk with people who, like, get you.
Yes, know? Yes, and a fellow 77er.
Yes.
Guys, if you have not already, check out livingonaprairietv.com. I mean, it is amazing. You will love it so much. I don't know what episode it is when they're fighting about the Waltons versus Little House, because that is my husband and me.
That's episode 4. Yes.
That's us. He will never win the fight. It's not a thing. It's not a thing.
And if, you know, on Instagram, we're at Prairie TV, so you can come and check out some stuff there, too. And thank you. Thank you. And wish us luck. We're still working on it.
Good luck. Fingers crossed. All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.